UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres says humanity has failed to limit global heating to 1.5 degrees with devastating consequences for the world. His comments come ahead of next month's climate summit in Brazil. Meanwhile, a UN review shows countries are failing to fulfil their plans to cut carbon emissions. Almost 200 countries who signed the Paris Climate Agreement a decade ago pledged to submit regular carbon-cutting plans. So far this year, only 64 nations have done so. Tom Rivett-Carnac is a former political strategist for the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change and now co-host of the Outrage and Optimism podcast. I spoke to him earlier. Tom, a warm welcome to Radio National Breakfast.
Thanks. Great to be here.
How do you reflect on this latest UN report, almost 10 years on since the historic Paris Agreement, which is really saying that more needs to be done?
Well, I mean, it's clearly disappointing. And I think we've seen that in the remarks from the Secretary General and also in the report, that it's demonstrating clearly that governments do not have the ambition necessary to keep us to 1.5 degrees. But you know what? If I went back to 2015 when Paris was negotiated and looked at today, I would have two reactions to how the world has evolved in the 10 years. The economics has gone further and faster than we could have imagined. Wind and solar are cheapest form of new power around the world. There's more jobs in the industries of the future than the industries of the past. But politics has not followed economics, and that's part of what's slowing us down.
Why do you think that's the case?
Well, it's a fascinating question. We always had the theory that if the economics move forward and you made more money from the solutions to the climate crisis than from making it worse, that the politics would come into line after that. But if you look around the world, the economics has moved so much faster than we anticipated, and yet you still don't win elections in many countries for saying you're going to be a climate leader. And I think one of the interesting questions is that a function of populist movements that are taking advantage of this issue to drive wedges? Or is it a function of our new media landscape where actually we need to deliberately reconnect those things? Otherwise, we're going to have a bifurcated future.
But here in Australia, for example, we're still seeing power prices going up, and particularly there's a lot of pushback in rural and regional areas where there's concern about the use of agricultural land for renewable projects and so on. Is it the fact that it's uneven? For some people, life might be better with climate mitigation. For others, it's not.
Well, I think any transition is messy, and what you say is very clear. For countries around the world, it makes far more sense to be investing in the industries of the future and transitioning their economies. But within that transition, there will be winners and losers. And sometimes the losers have a disproportionate amount of political power. I mean, look at the United States, for example. There are far more jobs in wind and solar in Texas than there is in oil and gas. But those industries don't have anything like the political power that the oil and gas and the mining industries have. So you see this situation where what should be in the economic interest of a certain place takes a long time to become the source of political power, and that slows us down.
The other element that seems to be alive politically is that, look, say for Australia, example, we're relatively a small country on the global scale when it comes to climate in some ways. Why should we have to go through this transition when other larger countries are not? Is that an argument that has also held quite a bit of weight in some parts of the world?
Well, it's a very easy argument to make, isn't it? I mean, we hear it in the UK, you know, we're 2% of global emissions. I've heard it, I think, in every country, some version of that. Why should we do this? And I think ultimately we need to flip that narrative, not from this is a burden to be borne and shared around, but this is an opportunity to be grasped. And we're seeing economic opportunity from the transition to clean energy and to the jobs of the future. A very significant proportion of the growth that China is currently exhibiting comes from those industries. So, yes, I appreciate that there are political challenges, it requires investment, transitions are messy, and these things take time. But if we're serious about being leaders in our two countries, in the UK and Australia, we have to grab these opportunities and not sit back and say, well, why should I have to do it? We should be jumping in and finding the solutions.
What do you make of the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres' comments? It's a stark tone saying that devastating consequences will now be inevitable.
Well, I mean, the Secretary General is telling the truth. You know, we have left this for so long that we are now on the cusp of passing through 1.5 degrees. And the impacts of that are devastating for people and ecosystems all around the world. And your country will experience it in heartbreaking ways with the Great Barrier Reef and other impacts that will affect people. However, what I would say is, just because you pass through 1.5 degrees doesn't mean that you therefore give up. 1.6 degrees is the next target, not 2 or 2.5. Every fraction of a degree matters. And there are thresholds in our climate system where these really quite alarming natural feedback loops and tipping points begin to be triggered. And we need to do everything to prevent ourselves from passing through. Yes, going through 1.5 degrees increases our risk. It doesn't mean it's game over for action to try and deal with this.
US President Donald Trump has long been a vocal critic of climate change mitigation, most recently calling climate change at the UN General Assembly the greatest con job ever perpetrated on the world. To what extent does that undermine global efforts to slow climate change?
Well, I mean, look, it doesn't help. And certainly when the US is behind a particular endeavor and leaning in to make something big happen, it makes everything easier. But it doesn't mean the world can't continue to move forward. I mean, 50% of the US population, 150 million people voted for Donald Trump. That can't mean that 8.5 billion people are condemned to a particular future. Donald Trump uses invective and language to rile up his base based on how he uses his populist narrative to try to build his own political power. He doesn't refer back to the science. He doesn't refer back to reality. So yes, of course, it's important. It doesn't help us. It slows us down. It doesn't stop the progress that we need to make. And we shouldn't let it take all the wind out of our sails in the progress we need to make in the coming years.
COP30 is taking place next month in Brazil. What should we be looking out for, and what would a successful COP look like?
I think what's critical, and this may be very important for Australia if COP31 is hosted in your country, is that we have moved beyond the point where it is about negotiated outcomes, where countries come together to agree a text, and that's the most important thing. The important thing here is implementation. It's the shift to what's really happening on the ground. It's countries bringing their commitments, it's cities, states, regions, investors. That momentum, that evidence of progress is where we now need to look. There is less that needs to be negotiated now than compared to what there was in previous years. What matters now is getting on and doing it.
Tom Rivett-Carnac there. Thank you very much for joining me this morning.
Thanks so much.
Tom is a former political strategist for the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change, now a co-host of the Outrage and Optimism podcast.